Well, hello, everyone. Can you believe I'm actually back on the war report? It's been almost 3 years since we did our last war report show. And I discovered last night I'm nervous. I'm actually nervous about coming back on the show. We did something in the neighborhood of 300 hours of show. You would think I would not be nervous, but I realized, as I said yesterday, I'm actually nervous about coming back on. Don't know why yet, but I'm nervous. But I'm also glad. I'm excited to be back. A lot has happened in the arena of the war on public education. Now we see the war on voter suppression. We see all kinds of things that I think are related to our basic theme about what is America, what is going on in America, and the critical race study. I don't call it a war, whatever is going on about it, fits right into what we've been talking about for almost 4.5 years on the war report. And it's so confusing to me that here we are in 2021, we're having to deal with the war on public education as it relates to curriculum. What is really, I think, happening is the people who are pushing critical race theory as an anti-white, anti-American, anti-democracy, and et cetera, they are really, again, this is my assessment based upon a whole lot of research over the years, and particularly over the last 5 or 6 weeks, getting ready for the comeback on radio. The notion that critical race theory is viewed supposedly as an anti-white people, white America, white history, and that critical race theory should not be, cannot be taught in our public schools. Now, just think about what I just said. This notion of whatever their notion is, that critical race theory is so detrimental, so wrong, that it could not or it should not be taught in American public schools. That is their premise. That's their pitch. That's their rallying call. And I will venture to say at the very beginning, 99% of the population have no idea what critical race theory is about. What I think you will find is when some people, when they're asked about it, the old joke, I don't know what it is, but I know I don't like it, is the prevailing mantra right now in America among millions, tens of millions of people who have all of a sudden been told about this thing called critical race theory, what it is, and how it disparages white America, what white America has done, white American history, and the individuals and the events that white America has done or achieved over hundreds of years is being attacked, being vilified by people who want to basically, I won't say destroy because that's too big, but basically wants to vilify white people. Now, that's a big statement I just made in terms of begging the question, like, what is critical race theory? What's its history? What are the themes of critical race theory? But before I even get into any of that, I want to say that critical race theory has been around since the 1970s. Some accredit it as around 1975, 76. And they accredit a professor who taught law, Derrick Bell, and then others for coming up with critical race theory. And so it's been around a long time. That's almost 50 years. And all of a sudden, we're learning about, well, I said learning about, that's a wrong statement. We're hearing about critical race theory over the last, what, 6 months, 9 months or so, not quite a year, and that it is anti-white, anti-whiteness, and that it needs, all that needs to change. Okay, I'm kind of rambling here because basically this is a very simple topic to talk about, but at the same time, it is an extremely complex topic or issue to talk about. And it's a topic that we've all experienced, black, white, brown, etc., informally, formally, historically, currently, but yet and still, it's very hard conversation to talk about race in America and critical race theory as it's being portrayed by Republican operatives, that it's anti-white and et cetera, only makes it that much more complicated to talk about. And I'll just say one more thing. I'm pretty sure most of you are aware or would agree that talking about race in America is a very hard subject to talk about. I don't care how old you are. I don't care what gender, what social economic status, what have you. Talking about race in America has always been a very hard topic for people to engage in. Compound that with where we are today in terms of all the things that are going on, attempts to bring equity, attempts to bring equality to all of our social institutions, and also, and I'm going to get back to this a little later on, either in this show or the next show. One of my main beliefs, and I've expressed this on previous shows on the War Report, when Obama was running for election in 2008, I've talked about this again, and so maybe you'll remember this if you weren't listening back then and you're new. I noticed in 2008, the newspapers, the news, they would say something about 2045, 46, 47, 48, America would no longer be a country where white people were the majority, that minorities would become the majority. This is in terms of population statistics. There will be more minority people, non-white people in America than white people. And it was very subtle. It was just a statement. But I saw it over and over again, and I heard it. I didn't pay a lot of attention in the beginning, but then one day it hit me. This is what is called dog whistle. It's a message in the statement that is almost subliminal for people to pick up. You know, when you have a whistle for your dog, you blow it. Humans don't hear it, but your dog hears it. That's what the dog whistle is. This was a message being sent to a segment of American population. And I read that once I understood it as saying, this is 2008. If we let this guy get elected president in 2008, and we are the majority population, what do you think is going to happen in 2045, 46, 47, 48, when America will become a minority majority, or the majority will be minority? Okay. I won't say I was stunned, but once I heard it and understood it, I never forgot it, obviously, because I said I mentioned it in the past, and I'm talking about it now. But here we are in 2021, and that statement of, listen, what's going to happen, or what can happen when white people are no longer in the majority, when people of color, I hate that word, but when people of color are in the numeral majority, they can elect Obama after Obama after Obama after Obama into infinity. And I'm looking at where we are now today and the attack on critical race theory as being related to what I talked about back in 2013, 14, 15 about the coming shift in power, population statistics representing power. We're seeing it now in terms of minorities and white supporters have come together and put Biden in and put Trump out at coalition. But here's something that really, really gets, and hopefully I'm not rambling. I'll tie all this together. In Georgia, when the people in Georgia elected two Democrats to go to the U.S. Senate, one black male, one white male. Both, quote, liberal progressive. All hell broke loose. And the point I'm trying to make, I'm getting to it right now. It was that event and other events around Democrats taking the presidency, the Senate, Congress, blew things up. And if you have any awareness about what has been happening in the last year, year and a half, this is some of the, I should say, these are some of the events that brought critical race theory to the front burner of the conservative, white conservative, Republican Party. Those guys who got elected in Georgia, which has been a red state pretty much forever, except for Carter and I think Clinton carried it once, quote, both Southerners. That became a super, super rallying point. Going back to what I said previously, that if Obama could get elected and whites are the majority, what the hell do you think is going to happen in 20, 45, 6, 7, 8? Now they're saying 2044 could be the earliest when we had this tipping point where minorities become the majority. What do you think is going to happen then? And that, I think, was the starting date of where we are now in terms of critical race theory being attacked all over the country. And here is the point for our show. They're attacking schools, public education, K through 12, and in some cases trying to even take it, their attack to a university. Listen to what I just said. K through 12, possibly into the university, are all being attacked for effort to prevent what people are calling the critical race theory as being anti-white and everything that whiteness stands for. Now, that's a big statement, I know. But if you've been watching this, listening to this, when I say this, this issue, in whatever form, newspaper, radio, TV, what have you, this attack on critical race theory is a wake-up call. It's the people are saying, this is something that we need to nip in the bud right here, right now. We need to take back our country. We need to reestablish our control so that we can tell people the greatness of what we've done. Okay, that's enough about that. Let's get into what is critical race theory. How many of you could give me a definition or even a sentence or paragraph of what critical race theory is? When did you learn about it? What do you know about it? What are your feelings towards it, if you even have any feelings? As I said earlier, this notion of critical race theory came about during the mid-1970s into the 1980s has became a formal type of concept and practice. Back in the mid-70s, as I mentioned, people like Derrick Bell, a lawyer teaching law, and others, they were beginning to assess the state of, I'll call, race relations in America at that time. And their assessment was driven by the fact that during the 50s, with the Supreme Court decision, Bakke versus, again, all of a sudden I'm missing out on that Supreme Court case, that basically ordered desegregation of public schools. The Civil Rights Movement, all the other movements, and attempts across the country to improve the political atmosphere of the country through legislation and through laws and et cetera. This group was saying 25 years have gone by, and basically we're really not that much better off now than we were back in the 50s and the 60s. Why? Why are we not better off? And they began to, again, these were a small group of law professors, and they were raising the question among their colleagues. They were raising the question among their students, again, at the college, university level. And they began to look for a different theory, explanation of why, after all the things that had happened in the past 25 years, there hasn't been any real super visible actual change. And what they were dealing with and what they eventually formulated was that racism was not basically an individual person's stance. Yes, people can be racist. People can be marginalized in terms of how they feel about different, quote, I've used the word race as if it's a real thing, but you know, it's not. It's a social construct. And that racial differences have meaning and qualities ascribed to these differences. Being white, you have the best qualities. Non-whites, to various degrees, have lesser good qualities down to super poor quality sort of thing. They were saying, no, it's not individual prejudice that sustain these deplorable conditions. It's the law, the policies, the culture, the social institutions that drives the racism, the differential perception, value, treatment of whites versus non-whites. It's the institutional, and it is the systemic, and that's the big word back then, the systemicness of how these practices, these laws, these policies, these practices are so embedded into the social institutions that have not been impacted to the point where we see change, or we can even hope for real, quote, again, systemic changes. Think about what I just said. is coming to a realization that, yes, we have prejudice. Yes, people act on their prejudice. Individually, collectively, into the millions of people, yes. But it is not that individual prejudice that maintains and perpetuates the status quo. It is the policies, the law, the practices of the social institutions. And these social institutions have race and racism embedded within them to the point that it is systemic. And because it's so systemic, you're not seeing, you're not experiencing any meaningful changes coming. Changes that are earth-shattering in nature. More or less, you're seeing changes that are glacier, like the movement of glaciers, so damn imperceivable that you almost don't see it in terms of the movement. To the lawyers, that was, to them, a very huge breakthrough. I want to say this, and I'll probably deal with it a little more in depth later. That was a big revelation in law, because they believe that laws and policies, if we codify them into law, they're going to produce the changes like almost overnight. That was wrong. And the development of this critical race theory and its principles were developed outside of law, maybe close to 100 years before critical race theory came about. A sociologist named W.E.B. Du Bois, black man who was the first person to get a PhD from Harvard, did his dissertation in an area that today would be 100% critical race theory premise, research, findings, and et cetera, laying the foundation back then on putting the emphasis on racial conflict in this country is structural in nature. Even though we see it manifest through individual and groups' behavior, it is a structural, social structure phenomena. And if you are aware and understand this, you are in a much better position to try and bring about systemic changes than if you go with race, racism issues, or individual small groups in nature. Now, I hope I said that in a way that you get the importance of this. I'll try it again in that, yes, you and I, we know people, black, white, brown, that could be prejudiced against other, quote, races, skin colors, what have you. Yes. And you know that there are probably people that you may even know where maybe they were super racist, but over time and experience with people of color, they began to change their perspective. They become less, quote, I'm using the word racist a lot, less racist. That's on an individual level. What the guys and the men and women who put together this critical race theory perspective, they were talking about on large scale, institutional. And remember, I had talked about the five basic institutions: economic, political, family, government, education. Those have been the prime institutional arrangement in this country and pretty much across all cultures, that racism has been embedded and became such a part of those institutions that was made possible to have generation after generation accept the status quo emotionally, motivationally, behaviorally, and hence maintain it and perpetuate it. That, to the critical race theorists, developers, was a major revelation. But as I said, in sociology, that was old hat. We were talking about it in the 1800s on an academic level. So that there's some continuity there in terms of the two disciplines dealing with the same thing, and now almost down in the same way, that if you know about it, it's kind of mind-blowing that those two disciplines are the ones that are dealing with what we're now calling critical race theory. Which brings me to my next point. It's a theory. As the title says, it's a theory. And as a theory, it's a set of ideas, maybe even a set of assumptions that are used to explain aspect of reality. And it's a theory that can be used to build law and policy on. It's a theory that can be used, understood, and applied to help change behavior. It's powerful. It's very powerful. And I believe it's that the power of the theory and its capabilities, if accepted, can bring about systemic changes a lot faster, easier than anything we've seen before. And I believe, and I'm only hesitating because I'm making a big statement, and these are statements coming from me, but I believe as an academic that this is what the conservatives, they all say, you know, only conservative Republicans, but the Republican Party is so afraid of, is the power that critical race theory and its themes, assumptions, if they are understood and adapted on a large scale, you would see major changes in America structurally. And that is what I believe. Again, I keep saying I believe because I'm not speaking for my team in terms of, you know, the team that we've been together for going on 5 years. I'm not speaking for the people who subscribe to the War Report and tend to share the perspectives, the values, and et cetera, that we've espoused over the years. I'm saying this is me after all these years as an academic, all these years of being a black man in America. This is what I'm seeing. This is my understanding of both critical race theory and why seemingly tens of millions of people are against it. And as I said earlier, and I say it with a smile, I don't know what it is, but I don't like it. I don't know what it is. I hate it. I don't know what it is, but I sure in the hell don't want it in my schools. I sure in the hell don't want it becoming policy, becoming law. It's back to what has been a major theme of this show when we talked about power, what I call the Machiavellian agenda, which is an agenda of how to get, how to keep, how to use power. And think about it. That's a powerful statement in itself. Don't want to be redundant. But anyway, that's what we're going to talk about this show and the two upcoming shows. Basically, I came back so that this whole issue of critical race theory is all the rage now. And I just couldn't sit on the sideline and not share what I'm seeing, my interpretation of what I'm seeing, and what I think is going to be the potential impact on the country now and the future, so that this is what we're going to be talking about, people, for the next, this week, next 2 weeks coming. So let me now go a little bit more, hopefully, structured in the conversation, as opposed to what way I just, you know, talked about it over the last 20, 25 minutes. Basically, as I said, critical race theory has been around for a long time, since the mid-70s, as it relates to law. Before that, in sociology, back into the 80s, 1880s, 1870s, and 1800s, period. It's been around a long time. But it's on the front burner now, as a result of a series of events that has taken place over the last year, year and a half, that has catapulted this theory into front page, must read, must see, must hear, must believe propaganda, I'm going to call it what it is, in my opinion, propaganda. And it, I believe, as I said earlier, Trump losing the 2020 election was the catalyst for the rise of attention to critical race theory and the resentment, the fear, the hatefulness of it as a result of that loss. It could have became an issue after Trump won. This notion of Trump won because of at least Russia interference in the election, if not China. Trump lost, according to Trumpites, because of interference in the last election. As you recall, he said, and all of his pontiffs and et cetera, that there was absolutely no way that Trump would not be reelected. The only way that Trump would not be elected would be voter fraud, massive voter fraud. They put that out on the table before the election, weeks, months before the election, basically saying the guy was bulletproof. He was going to be reelected. And if he's not, you can believe, you can bet every penny that you have that it was widespread, massive voter fraud. As strange as that may sound, the research by myself and by others tend to put that event as the real, real starting point for discussion about critical race theory and what it means to America, the spurging of America in the past, present, and going forward. Again, that's a big statement, but if I'll take you through something, when back in, I think it was the fall, this past fall, Trump, at the urging of some of his supporters and et cetera, adopted the stance that critical race theory was destructive, it itself was racist, unfounded, and damn near criminal. As a result, Trump ordered the budget, Office of Management and Budget, to stop funding training on critical race theory for federal employees. It also wanted the military to stop any type of training and classes of soldiers in critical race theory. These were things that he, as president, could do, could control, and he did it. And if you've been watching television, it wasn't too long ago that there was a heated debate in Washington at a Senate hearing, where the Joint Chiefs of Staff got into it with one of the senators over critical race theory, and which is a continuation, as I said, of Trump implementing these policies, restrictions back in the last fall. That was one of the real first blows of bringing critical race theory to the forefront, and that critical race theory was a boogeyman that had to be stopped, had to be put down. That was a major shot across the bow, as we would say, when he ordered government agencies to stop critical race theory training. It's reported that, again, I'm going to delineate something here. My opinion, Trump, most of his life, has been not a person who embraced and supported real democracy, equity, equality, etc. My study of the man. Okay, now, around the same time that Trump was doing his thing, something else happened. How many of you remember the Times, I think it was Times, publication of the 1619 Project? That project, which, by the way, won a Pulitzer Prize in 2019, did a recasting of American history. One of the big things it stated was that America was truly founded not 1776, but 1619. And I'll make it more precise. August 20th, 1619 is what the 1619 Project was all about. On that day, according to history, is when a ship pulled up on the shores in Virginia, I think it was, and was crippled and struck a bargain with the colonists there to provide the colonists to provide what they needed to repair their ship, and they would pay in the form of 20, the number varies, 20 to 30 African slaves that they had on their ship, bringing the Africans to America on that day. And that day, according to the 1619 Project, was the real beginning of what we now call the United States of America. Not 1776, the revolution separating from the colonists from England. That project, 1619, whoa, it sent shockwaves through the conservative Republican Party. It becomes one of the important events, dates of the current war on critical race theory. Just another event that laid the foundation for the Republican Party. And I don't like talking in terms of Republican and Democrats, but basically the war on critical race theory isn't a Republican war. A conservative Republican war that has spread to other Republicans, and probably some Democrats too, who are borderline as to where they stand on equality, equity for all Americans. So we have a process here, a building up of this movement to cast any effort to bring about real quality systemic change to American social structure, social institution, is detrimental, not good for the country, and inspired by either Americans who lean towards socialism, communism, and all the other negative ism in America, and gave it a real foundation to launch the campaign to neutralize any force or forces coming out of this movement, this critical race theory movement, aimed at trying to bring about systemic changes. Now, that is a very, very, very capsule version of how this has all come about. There's a lot more to be said here, and there are times in putting this together, I thought, boy, wouldn't it be better if this was a one semester, like graduate seminar, or if you're on a quarter system, 10-week grad seminar, where you could really dive into the subject matter and be able to thoroughly take your time and go through it, sharing ideas, understanding that you can only get when you hopefully get a quality grad seminar as a rule. I guess maybe that's probably one of the things that made me nervous and I could feel in the pressure is like, how do I really do justice to this topic in a 55-minute, one-hour format, even if it's going to go 3 weeks in the doing? I felt then, and I think I now understand what me being nervous and et cetera about, is I'm rushing. And I don't feel like I'm doing justice to this super, super important topic. And that's causing me some internal pain. But what I wanted to do today, and I hope I did it, is set the foundation for a more structured, nuanced conversation over the next 2 weeks. And maybe I'll hear from some of you in terms of, you know, Facebook comments, emails, or what have you. Give me an idea of what you are thinking, your understanding, and also assessment of this kind of rambling initial presentation, so that I've taken my first shot. I hope it makes sense to you. It's not as structured as I said, just said I want to be going forward, and it's a heavy issue. Heavy topic, and one that's very important. I only have a few minutes left. Let me end by saying that my assessment of the overall objective of this current war on critical race theory is aimed at getting back to the fold those middle-class suburbanites and the female vote back to the Republican Party for 2022. That this vehicle, critical race theory, casting it as the boogeyman, is considered by some, if not most, the best vehicle for bringing back that group that you can come up with. Because we all know that the suburbanites, the middle class, and the women are very, very, very much concerned and in tune with the schooling of their children. They will come out in groves in a hot second if there are things that are going on that can impact, especially negative, their kids. We saw this right after the 1954 Supreme Court decision ordering desegregation of schools. And I'll end on this. Watching television I must have been, 10, 12 years old, 13 years old sort of thing, in the aftermath, I saw women in Boston carrying signs, spitting, yelling, screaming, throwing things at the kids that were being bussed into their schools. That shocked the hell out of me. It was Boston, the home of liberalism. It was Boston, and these were white mothers, women, being vicious and vile. I have never forgotten that. Next week, I'll be 78 years old. So we're talking about something that happened well over 65 years ago for me. I have never gotten that in the images. I see critical race theory as having the same impact that the Supreme Court decision of 1954 desegregating schools is having now and will possibly have with critical race theory. I think my time is up, and if that's the case, I will have to say goodbye. And I kind of apologize for, I don't like the way in which I have done this show, to be very frank, honest with you. I struggle trying to figure out how to present this. There is so much data on this. I mean, tons and tons in this short period of time that I've been sifting through. And I just haven't been able to come up with what I felt was the best way to present this to you. So if I blew it, I'm apologizing now and promising that I'll be better suited for the job come next week. With that, my time is up. I'm going to have to say goodbye. Have a good rest of your day and week coming up. Take care, people.